case, it's very appropriate that the last story was about improv because, as I've said all night, we are here with the folks of Improvised X-Files. For the final story, it will be one of their number. I just want to plug their show. I saw it opening night. It was super, super great. It's every Friday at, what, 10:30 at the playground? 10 p.m. at the playground. Basically, they will improvise an episode of X-Files before your eyes. They have music. They have cool costumes that make them look like agents. And it's just, it's really, really great. And like I said, I have never seen X-Files, and I still really enjoyed it. So with that said, Jake Allen Miller.
Yeah, we're super honored to be here. I think when we started doing our show, it was... Mainly the point was so that we could get together with our friends and really kind of just kind of nerd out on these things that we love and kind of combine improv and these other things that we love. So it's exciting to be in a room of kindred spirits in that way. And speaking of kindred spirits, thank you, Charles, for already mentioning the WWE Network tonight. It's a good primer for the story that I'm about to tell. So here we go. On July 7th, 1996, Hulk Hogan turned heel. Hulk Hogan turned heel and sent me on a quest for truth that I have been on for the rest of my life, that I'm still on to this day. A real quick, if you don't know what I mean by heel, I think most people in this room probably do. Heels and baby faces are the sort of goofy, insidery terms for pro wrestling's good guys and bad guys. Pro wrestling started in like the early 20th century with like carnivals. It was in the beginning a legitimate sporting event. A strong man would be on stage at these carnivals and challenge everyone in the room, whoever was there, to come up and take him down, be able to bring him down to the floor. But before long, these promoters, these carnies, realized that by manipulating the truth a little bit, by being in control of the outcomes, people would be even more engaged to the show that they were putting on. That they lied just a little bit, they could put on a better show. So eventually they created baby faces. These were plants that were in the crowd that looked like you and me, fresh, young guys. They looked like normal people, and somehow they would come on stage and defeat these strong men. And these carnies actually discovered something really cool when they made good guys and bad guys. They became like myth makers. They became the modern authors of the really like the most prevalent morality play that we have that's still ongoing. Professional wrestling. The morality play that for Jake Allen Miller when he was like 3 years old to 10 years old used to define his sense of good and evil. It didn't matter so much that the stories were fake. It mattered that good always won, right? It didn't matter what happened to Hulk Hogan as long as he came out on the, like at the end of the story at WrestleMania, as long as Hulk Hogan was the winner, as long as our heroes were the winner. That was why these guys were telling these stories. That's why it was important. So I say again, on July 7th, 1996, Hulk Hogan turned heel. So it happened at this event called Bash at the Beach, just real quick. These two guys, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, they were from the WWF, and we all knew it, but they kind of acted like they were like invading WCW where Hulk Hogan was, and there was a big match, and they said, we have a mystery partner. Give us your three best, Sting, Lex Luger, Randy Savage, against the two of us and a mystery partner, right? A mystery partner. So the match starts. I just watched it today on the WWE. The match starts, and the mystery partner's not there. What? Why? What? It's just the two of them. And eventually, we'll skip all the psychology in between, but Randy Savage is in the middle of the ring, getting his ass kicked by these two guys. He needs help, so who's coming down the aisle? Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan walks down to the aisle, obviously to rescue his best friend. It's not really true, but that's the truth they had us believe. His best friend, Randy Savage. And instead, he drops not one, not two, but three atomic leg drops on Randy Savage. Not even the reach around of a big boot beforehand, like just straight three leg drops. The fans are throwing trash in the ring. Hulk Hogan says that we betrayed him as fans, that he worked so hard for us for all those years, and we turned our back on him. We didn't appreciate him anymore. So now he and these two outsiders are going to take over the world. He didn't just say professional wrestling. He said, we're going to take over the whole world. And then I thought we could make some sort of like Hulk Hogan, like going to like Iraq and like taking out the Saddam Hussein regime with like a sleeper hold. but he already did that at WrestleMania 6. That actually happened. So this was sort of the first time. We couldn't afford the pay-per-view events, which is what this was. So I had to like watch like the tacky recap the next night on WCW Monday Nitro. So I didn't even get to like experience this thing organically as it happened. I got this like hit you in the face with the terrible, terrible thing, the history-changing thing that happened the night before. Hulk Hogan was now a bad guy. So at 10 years old in 1996, I had my first like existential crisis. I started asking myself the questions that I continue to ask myself to this day. How could I be so wrong about something that I knew that strongly Hulk Hogan was my hero? Who are the good guys in the world? And what is the truth? What is the truth of everything? So I kept searching, and I did what any sort of self-respecting child of a single mother growing up in the Midwest would do when he's on a search for truth. I joined a youth group. Started going to church, and I dove in. Like, I really got into this thing. I was super into the Christian the whole game. I was on a trajectory. That's sort of a different story for a different theme. But I was on a trajectory that if my faith didn't eventually break down, I probably would like be the pastor of one of those basketball stadium churches right now. And I'd probably like own a really big boat, which would be cool. But just like my faith in Hulk Hogan had to eventually break, that faith eventually broke as well. And if you ever have a theme of like when an American church splits over the cost of a basketball gym they were building in the back of the church, I'd be happy to tell the story of how my faith actually broke down. So I'm still looking for the answers to those questions now, and somehow I ended up being an improviser, where I make my own myths, and I think whenever I'm improvising, I'm trying to create good guys and bad guys and see if these creatures that I'm creating for that moment, these heels and baby faces, know the answers to those questions. And that's what led me to Chicago, where about 3 years ago, I met Hulk Hogan. It was at a book signing. But something cool happened. I met Hulk Hogan. I was near the end of the line. I shook his hand and I was telling him how he was my hero when I was a kid. And this book signing was a day after he announced he was returning to wrestling after about 5 years off. And he shakes my hand and he says, "You know, I'm coming back." I said, "Of course." I told him, "Yeah, of course. We're all over it." I think I was indicating that, like, we're, like, wrestling fans. Like, we together, we know it. And I made this motion of, like, a keyboard. Because there's this whole internet wrestling fan thing where the internet wrestling fans know a little bit more about what's going on than just your regular old wrestling fan. And we pride ourselves on that, you guys. And so I think Hulk somehow recognized that I was on the pulse of the wrestling industry. And he stops, he puts his pen down, and he says, "Hey, what's Vince saying?" to me. Like, I know Vince McMahon's, like, perception of this. Like Hulk thought it had trickled down to some, like, easy board forum. Like, I don't know that I would know. Of course, I didn't know anything, but in that moment I said, "Well, nothing yet, but you know he's going to take his shots, brother." I called him brother, and he put his hand out to shake my hand again, and he goes, "Yeah, you're right, brother." And I could feel in that second handshake that betrayal from when I was 10 years old, like kind of washing off. It was like me and my hero had this moment to reconcile where he needed me in that brief moment. Hulk Hogan needed me to ease his mind about this nervous decision he was making about getting back into wrestling and it not being with Vince, it was with another company. So I think what I learned by, you know, worshiping at the altar of Hulk Hogan, then the altar of Jesus Christ, they're right next to each other in love. And then finding myself as an improviser and getting back into wrestling again. I went to WrestleMania 30 2 weeks ago. We'll talk later. I learned that heroes will always come and go in life. They're not always going to have the answers. The truth is out there, but I don't know if it's really that fun to figure it out exactly. Your heroes aren't going to always be able to tell you the answers to your questions, but as long as they're shining a light on those topics, on those ideas in your life, then I think they're doing their job. Thanks.
I sincerely want to thank you for that story, because not that what I always say isn't sincere, but I'm a big comics guy, and I always wonder why there's such a huge crossover between comic book fans and wrestling fans, and I think you kind of put a point on that for me very nicely. So thank you very much. That was awesome. Claire, did you come up here to say something?
No, I came up here to sing something.
Oh, yeah.
I will say, though, your story's completely true. I've now been coming to your stories for about 3 years, and your stories taught me something I did not know before, which was that overlap between wrestling fans and nerds, I didn't know existed. That was not what I imagined when I thought of people who were wrestling fans.
Like, my only exposure to wrestling fans that I knew of growing up was my stepbrother, who was, like, an asshole and, a super jock, like, "Ooh, you read comics, you fucking geek." So, like, I thought every wrestling fan was like that. That is super not true at all.
I just imagined you as a 12-year-old and you still had long hair and a beard.